Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is the World Cup on Caught Offside.
Ronaldo! Oh, it's come on, Tom! Ronaldo! Brazil are in front! It's Ronaldo!
And Donovan has scored! Oh, can you believe this? Go, go, USA!
Aimed it for Kurtzsa! And Germany are the champions of the world. It's Mbappe!
Here are your hosts, Andrew and JJ.
What did we just see? Oh, yes! From the suburbs of Philadelphia and from an apartment in Brooklyn, New York, Andrew Gunling, JJ Devaney. Oh, my God. What's up, brother?
That was just the most tense game that I have ever watched in all of my life that I've been so invested in. That did not involve a team that I cared about. It was a stunning World Cup final. I think in the end, we got the right result. Result. It'll go into the annals as a draw. But I think we got the right winner of the trophy. And just to let everyone know, we've abandoned the trophy lift for the simple reason that, it was just long and weird and on this bizarre loopy stage that basically is the Qatar symbol for the World Cup, and Gianni Infantino was there and the Emir was there and Macron was there smiling and there was air hostesses, and we just had to get out because
that's
this game,
how they all work, that's every one of these things, that's
yeah.
Fine,
yeah, that's lately, that's all it's been.
I you said it perfectly there. I don't know that I've ever felt so emotionally invested in a game as a pure neutral. I mean, it was terrifying. It was pure edge of the seat stuff. It was, I don't know, for me, look, I'm not 40 yet. Like, I'm still in my 30s. Like, right. I haven't seen half of what, you know, a certain segment of the population out
weird
there has
flex.
Seen. No, but like, I'm just saying, for me, it's the pinnacle of this sport. Like, I feel like you could maybe say billions of people across the world that watched that today experienced this shared moment of witnessing the most incredible match that this sport has ever produced. It's like, it's one of these things we all collectively now, I feel like, have an answer to the question, what's the greatest game you've ever seen? What was the greatest save you've ever seen? Like, we all have answers now to all of those questions, and they're all the same for billions of people that watched that today.
I think the mad thing about this one is that, and I guess I should no longer consider these things mad because it was only 2-0. But if you checked in with me around, you know, the 70th minute, this was just ticking along towards a final we'd remember because Messi was going to lift the World Cup. There was a great, like an all-time second goal.
Yeah.
But that was it. Like, there was
but,
nothing
but it
else.
Was, but it would have been good enough to stand on its own as one of the all-time memorable World Cup finals. I really do believe that.
It would not have been a great game. What we got in the end was an all-time great game. Mm-hmm. That was not petering towards that. It would have been a comprehensive, the headline writers would have said what? They would have said, Argentina completely dominate France. France not at the races. There would
have just been Messi's moment.
Yeah,
like it would. The narrative would have swirled around him. And in the end, we're still at that with the addition of it being within the context of the greatest game that we've seen in this sport.
Well, we have to remind ourselves that the French had not had a shot on target till Mbappe had that one that ballooned over the top. No, excuse me, they hadn't had a shot.
71st minute. In my notes, France finally registers a shot. Mbappe skies one. And it took into the 71st minute for them to register a shot, JJ.
I remember making notes, and some of the notes said, France getting some crosses in now. I remember Tio Hernandez had like two crosses in the space of 5 minutes down the left-hand side. But that was it. There was nothing. And then it all changed.
Yeah. Then it all, in the blink of an eye. Of course, if you are watching this right now, thank you for joining us. We are streaming live on the Caught Offside YouTube page. Thank you, everybody, for being with us. If you were waiting for us to start, we appreciate your time and your patience. If you're listening to this on the podcast right now, thank you, of course, as well. Everybody out there, be sure to subscribe, rate, review, all of those things. And if you're here live on the YouTube live stream, be involved. Get on to the chat page. We want to be as interactive with all of you as possible, because I'm sure everybody is just feeling all of the feelings, emotions, thoughts after one of the most thrilling sporting experiences that I think any of us have ever seen, certainly from a neutral perspective. We all have our ties to certain teams, and we'll always remember, you know, those games for our teams in a different way. But from a neutral perspective, I don't know. I can probably count on like two fingers the times I felt the way that I felt when that game ended, or as certain moments from that game were transpiring. It's almost unprecedented for me. It was really, really incredible, JJ.
Can we do this bit first? Because Queso Madness in the chat, best final ever in any tournament.
So what are we talking here?
So like I would take everything together now. So there's bound to be Copa America finals we missed out on. I'm thinking just in terms of World Cups. Nothing comes close. Like, no. 86 itself was a good World Cup final. 90 was terrible. 94 was awful. 98 was good, but like France ran away with it.
Yeah.
2002 was comprehensively Brazil.
2006 was memorable, but I don't know if it was for all the right reasons. It was dramatic.
2006 was memorable. 2010.
Dramatic, but not a great game.
14, not a great game.
Dramatic, not a great game. Yeah.
Yeah. 18 was shaping up to be a great one, and then it really wasn't. So, yeah, I mean, if you go Euros as well, I thought Euro 2000, where France themselves won that one, they were 1-0 down to Italy. But it was a lot of Catenaccio versus the French trying to get it. And then they got a late one. But the reason that was so dramatic was it was a Trezeguet golden goal that won it. Remember golden goals?
Sure.
So for me, I definitely think this is the best international tournament final I've seen. And look, I can't remember the last one, so I guess it absolutely is the best one.
Imagine if golden goal still existed and the World Cup ended on Messi scoring an extra time to win the World Cup. And that was it. The last touch of the ball. We got to bring back golden goal. We got to bring that back.
Yeah, I did love it. And I never felt they gave it enough time. They kind of abandoned it. They brought it in for a couple of tournaments and then they abandoned it because they felt it wasn't getting the desired results. But,
yeah, I mean, I'm even now trying to like move into Champions League finals and see where this final would rank. I mean, obviously, I always Istanbul. Think about Liverpool, AC Milan is always the one that comes to my mind the quickest. I mean, when you add in the messy storyline, I think this might, it's not, put it this way. Like, again, we're in the moment still. Like, there will be a time for reflection when we can take a step back. But I'll say this. If you are somebody out there, if you're somebody out there right now who is prepared to say we just witnessed the greatest final that the sport has ever seen, I won't fight you. Like, I can think and we can come up with other candidates and we can really sift through it. But like, if you want to say that, you're not crazy. That's fine.
Steven Schultz, how am I supposed to just go back to Aston Villa versus Southampton after this? I am simply not ready.
It's so true. Well, like, think about, look, we have a lot to get to, but I was going to mention this later, but if somebody's going to bring that up now, like, this is not meant as a slight on Brighton. I don't mean it that way. I hope it doesn't come across that way. But like Alexis McAllister just experienced this. Like he just became, like he was a player for Brighton before. He was fine. He was a good player, but he's not like a global superstar. He goes off to Argentina, goes on this month-long odyssey, becomes a hero to a nation, experiences the greatest victory perhaps in that country's history. He'll have statues of him. And like a week from now, he goes back to Brighton and he's just like a guy back in the, like, how?
Andrew Rinke, how is McAllister supposed to go back to Brighton and play with Dunk after running the Argentinian midfield?
It's true. But like, that's one of the storylines that makes this Argentina team so compelling to me is because, yes, it is Argentina. They do have Lionel Messi, arguably still the greatest player in the world. There are great players on that team, certainly. And we know what their form was coming into this tournament. They were top three favorite for a reason. But in all seriousness, though, like go up and down the roster for Argentina. Like, yeah, they have really great, there's great players there. But like, it's not a team loaded with Man City standouts, Real Madrid standouts, Barcelona standouts, Bayern Munich standouts. Like they have some pepper throughout, but like, They got the most out of that group of players, unquestionably. I mean, there's, you know, a bunch of Atletico Madrid guys. We just mentioned a Brighton guy, Sevilla. Like, these are good teams, certainly. But, like, it's not, you know, it's not 0-2 Brazil. But they were able to get that kind of firepower from a group of players that maybe on their own aren't necessarily that.
Harley Dude saying, RDP and Molina have been poor for Atleti. Yeah, I mean, international football is just a different thing. It's funny. I towards the end of the game, I had your questions, Andrew, and I'm not for 1 minute suggesting that you're so obvious now that I knew what your questions would be, but perhaps I am. But yeah. I had some of your questions in my head, like who was your man of the match for Argentina, and I was going through like Alexis McAllister, Rodrigo De Paul. Who else did I do? I think was brilliant.
Messi did score twice.
Yeah, I know, but beyond
Di Maria was probably
Angel Di Maria was amazing. Perhaps that was a substitution that Scaloni would look back and think maybe I could have got a little bit longer out of him, considering this is the last tournament. What are you saving him for?
Well, you want to talk about that?
Yeah,
because I know I saw, I forget, somebody tweeted, I don't remember who, questioning whether or not Di Maria going out in the 63rd is the worst substitution in the history of the tournament, and like, I get that because of how well he was playing. We can't forget, though, what was it? He was unavailable in the last three knockout stage matches or didn't start the last three knockout stage games, nursing an injury. Like, at a certain point, you do have to look at it from Scaloni's perspective. We have a two-goal lead. I've got a player who his fitness is not 100% for however great he was playing. Yeah. I have to be careful. This is not the time to, like, go for glory here. Like, two goals up should have been
like,
enough.
Like just from a, so by the way, just to interrupt the my girlfriend Darcy just showed, they put some kind of weird robe on Messi.
Yeah, my buddy Shafay just texted. I don't have the screen in front of me right now that we're recording, but he said Messi is in a sexy little nighty now.
Yeah, it's a see-through thing with a gold, like a kind of a gold trim. Oh God. Brian Garcia is so scripted and manufactured. I didn't feel any sort of emotion at all. I mean, that's the problem. We are now off the field and we're into the gross.
Wait. Does he mean in reference to the game or happening now?
No. If he's talking about the game, then he's
lost all sense of joy. He doesn't know how to experience human feeling.
Well, he should be on InfoWars right now, not on Caught Offside. That's where he should probably go. Don't go there, by the way. Casey, take that thing off of Messi. Like, that's the problem now. Now reality comes crashing in on our joy. I just want to live in that game.
Nothing can. There's nothing. I don't care what's going on that stage right now. Nothing could interfere with the way that I'm feeling about that game. Absolutely nothing.
Here's a good one for you, Andrew. Yeah. Seeing as we're talking about Di Maria just there a second ago, Noah says, Andrew asked on the pod one time, which goals are the best, the thunderbolts out of nowhere or the long slaloming solo goals? Argentina's second team goal, whichever type that is my answer. Sublime. That goal, I screeched. That goal, Andrew, is just, it was so beautiful. Because at that moment, I said, they're going to just win this game. And I welled up with emotion. It was so beautiful. Yeah. Like, Molina with the one-time pass into the midfield, Messi round the corner, taking two French players away, McAllister following his run. And like, I know Messi's like little flick is probably the standout moment from the move, but the weighted pass of McAllister into Di Maria, who just, it was such an amazing goal. And that goal is iconic now. Absolutely iconic.
Yeah, that's the goal. I mean, look, there's a lot of moments in this game that'll be remembered forever. But if you're hoping that your World Cup final delivers you one of those moments that's replayed on highlight reels for the rest of time, that one will surely be it. So I have my kind of like notes to take us through sequentially, and we can stop along the way and talk about different moments that stood out. But before we do that, because the game was so crazy, I feel like there could be so many different answers. Can we play a quick game? I'm going to count to three. And at the same time, I want each of us to say what we thought was the craziest moment of the game. Can we do that?
The craziest moment.
I'll give you a second to think.
Okay.
Okay. Ready? One, two, three. Martinez with the biggest save in history at one end of the field. And then Lautaro Martinez putting a header wide at the other end.
I kind of knew, so I let you say it. The Martinez save was, I mean, first of all, technically, it's such a good save. Well, I can't remember. Was that from Thuram or was it from?
Was it Kolo Muani?
Maybe it was Kolo Muani.
I don't even remember. I thought it was, but I'm not. You could be right. It might have been Thuram.
He made himself. We have so many soccer and goalkeeping cliches, but he made himself just like as many points of contact as there could be with a shot. I'll do this. And it wasn't quite the 5-point star that Schmeichel became famous for, but I think he got his left boot to it or something. Enormous, truly enormous. And you're talking about Lautaro Martinez. I know his shot led to the Messi goal for the 3-2. I get that. He did not look good when he came in. Like, he looked kind of slow and labored, and I had no confidence he was going to find the back of the net. From a player who we know in Serie A with Inter has been good. This was not, I mean, there was a real danger that had this got away from Argentina and France had won the game, that the fall guys would be possibly Messi for giving up the ball.
No, I don't think anything could have happened that would have made him that.
I mean, it was just...
We'll never know, but I think he's reached a level where no one was going to ever blame him, no matter what happened.
Well, Otamendi would have been in there, I think.
He gave up a penalty. Yeah. But, I mean, just that sequence, JJ. I mean, like, imagine a World Cup final ending on the Troy Deeney sequence. Like, that was almost what we were staring down there. It wasn't a penalty, but Emi Martinez making a save of almost equal quality, and then play going right back down the other way in real time. I don't know that I quite understood just how much of a free header that was for Lautaro Martinez. He's got to score.
Gabriel Bustamante, Fraud Toro Martinez.
I mean, like, it's not, obviously they won. They're all heroes now. So it feels weird to be like critical and call guys that, but like there is an alternate universe right now where he's excommunicated from Argentinian society. Like, I mean, watching the replay as that was getting ready for penalties, I thought if they lose this now, he'll never live it down. It was a 6 yards out with the goal there for him. I mean, Lloris is doing the best he can. He made it, you know, but like it's so far wide. It was harder to do what he did than it would have been to just put that on frame. Anyway,
it's not been a great tournament for Inter strikers. Let's be honest.
No, you're right. You're right. Seriously. All right. So let's go through some of this, and then, you know, I'll run through my notes. You stop me along the way for all the big moments that deserve further explanation. All of you guys watching on the YouTube live stream right now, continue to chime in, because we want to be taking your comments all the way throughout this. Because that's what makes this as much fun as it is, especially after a game like that. I should say, too, for anyone who joined late, the reason my background looks like I'm being held hostage somewhere, it's just my parents' basement. I'm here for it. We had a Hanukkah party this weekend. It was great fun. And so I'm still here. We're going to head back to New York later tonight. So that's why this looks the way it does.
Right. Before you get into your list of, I'm sure it'll be a very boring list, and I'm going to have to spice it up. I'm joking. It was a great game. Josh Ray, this game reminded me of the Clark Griswold blow-up rant after not getting his bonus check and then saying, "Where's the Tylenol?" That's how I feel after this game. I completely concur with that.
Yes. All right. We'll roll through it. we start early on, JJ, and like quickly in this game, France, I don't know, they didn't look right. Like it's hard to explain right away, but you fifth minute giveaway, McAllister with a laser right at Hugo Lloris. Like it started to kind of get your guard up a little bit, thinking, okay, like, like France a little sloppy. I don't know what's up. Then ninth minute, JJ, we spoke the other day after the quarterfinals about the awkwardness of the Lloris Kane coming together for a penalty of the two faces of a generation at Tottenham. Ninth minute, the new most awkward Tottenham teammate moment of the tournament when Christian Romero injures Hugo Lloris. I was just like, really? Is this really how it has to be?
In fairness, he was shoved into him by a French player. So,
but Romero is never one to shy away from contact.
No, and never one to just get into somebody's face. Absolutely. Okay, I just about the start of the game, Andrew. From the national anthems, did you see the way the Argentinians sung the national anthem? The way Messi barked it out. They were on it. Absolutely on it. And they brought that intensity into the game. And France didn't do that. France were second to every ball. They were, you know, they were just, and we'll get to some of the things Deschamps did to try and, you know, liven the performance up. But they didn't have that intensity. Now, here's a final where you have one team who is going to bring the intensity. They're going to bring, a kind of passion isn't the right word, but they're going to go for it against a side that wins games by not going for it. And that's what this final mostly was.
Yeah, that's pretty true. I mean, I put here first 15 minutes to sum it up. Argentina getting through France's midfield with no difficulty. And really, I don't know if you thought this at any point too, like we've made such a big deal throughout the course of this tournament of the greatness of France in that the injuries don't seem to matter. They have this way of playing and insert the next guy and the machine just keeps rolling along and you haven't really felt any of those absences at any real moment. But I thought in those 15 minutes, watching the way Argentina was just carving through the midfield so easily, it was maybe the first time where I thought, boy, they could use N'Golo Kanté right now, or a player like that.
They were overran in midfield. I think also there was an expectation prior to the game that Argentina were going to go down that right side, attack the left back, get at Teo Hernandez. But if anything, it was the left-hand side that they gave trouble on both sides. Di Maria versus Koundé and Dembele on that side was a complete and total mismatch. France did nothing, like literally nothing. I'm trying to think of moments where, oh, that was excellent Argentinian defending or play to break up what was happening there.
Nope. But
nope, it wasn't. They just completely it was one directional.
It really was. 17th minute, another giveaway from Teo Hernandez. He really struggled. Argentina on the counter. Great ball from Messi to DePaul. Pass to Di Maria, but he skied it over the bar well into the stands. It was a really good opportunity. It was one of those moments where, you know, because if you take yourself back in the moment, at some point you do think, okay, well, France, they're going to come alive at some point. We've seen it throughout the course of the tournament. When they need to score goals, they do. And so I started to kind of keep track of these moments of when the French wave comes, what are going to be the moments that we look back on and thought, Argentina let them stay in this game. That was one of them for me. Di Maria in space, a good opportunity, and he just skied it over the bar, which brings me, JJ, to the Devani Pitch Report.
Have we got a sponsor yet?
Not yet. And I would say, sadly for you, you better be careful because Jenny Taft is encroaching on your territory. She had a big pitch report in this one. And I thought, oh, JJ is not going to like this. This is his world.
Hey, Jenny, how about you stay off my turf?
Shots fired. But I wanted to ask you, though, because there, you know, I watched the ball to Di Maria. Maybe it was a little bit bouncy on the way in. Could that have been the pitch? I know there was that patch in front of the goal.
Resodded.
Resodded. I was wondering, you know, is that going to make things uncomfortable? It just felt like we haven't done many Devani pitch reports during this tournament. It feels like we need one here for the final.
Yeah. So the pitch was very interesting. It was, you know, symptomatic of all modern pitches in that it was hard. You could see that by the bounce of the ball, but it was cutting up too. So you saw a lot of players trying to pat. Oh, very good, Noah. Pitch slapped with JJ Devaney. So the ball was flying around and was moving decently on it, but it would bobble. But players were slipping. There was plenty of slipping happening. And just from a visual standpoint, I've never seen anything so Sunday league in my life as the resodding of the 6-yard box, because you could clearly see the square that had been dug up and replaced versus the rest of the field that hadn't been touched. It was very kind of New York City Parks and Rec replacing a soccer field on Randall's Island, which is a deep cut from soccer here in New York. But that's what it looked like. And I honestly felt that a couple of times people have noticed on the broadcast that on the slow motion replay, when a player was on the ground holding himself in the clenches of some kind of injury, either feigned or real, if you looked at the bottom of his cleats, there was an incredible amount of dirt on the cleat, not usual for the modern field. So my pitch report would be, I give a 6 out of 10, and it just gets a 6 because it held up at least. And thankfully the penalties were taken at the good goal mouth, as opposed to the reconstructed goal mouth.
Yeah. So that was the 17th minute where I started to think, ooh, are Argentina, are they just letting France in this game? Because inevitably France will come alive. But just 4 minutes later, the 21st minute, Di Maria, wow, what a move to get past Dembele. Just takes him out of the play, or does he? Because then Dembele tries to come back and it's a penalty. Messi converts, of course he does, and it's a goal. In the moment, I thought, no controversy. It looked every bit a penalty. Dembele trying to get back into the play, trips up Di Maria, stonewall. I didn't give it a second thought. Fast forward to halftime when you watch replays, and I thought, wait a minute, I don't think he actually touched him. Yeah, you know, I wanted to be mad at Dembele. What are you doing fouling him in that position? Don't compound a mistake with a worse mistake. But I don't think he actually did. I think Di Maria knew. I mean, there's contact upper body, their arms touch. So Di Maria knows Dembele's behind him. And I think he just decides, I'm going to ground here. Everyone will think that he's tripped me. And he's right. There was no VAR intervention, nothing. But I'm not seeking out controversy to in some way invalidate this game. That's the last thing I want to do. But if we're just speaking facts, like, I don't know that there was any actual contact there.
I would have to watch it again. I thought there was contact, and I thought in the replay there still was a little bit of contact, but it was minimal. My anger was entirely focused on, and I think it was the same anger Deschamps showed later on in the half, on Dembele. Uh-huh. It's not ideal that Koundé is the one to tuck in and that it's Dembele that has to go out. But when you have to do that job, you have to do it properly. And he runs out, and it's such an easy turn. You know, he just cuts. It's not like there's some elaborate step over. It's just a cut. Stay on your feet. Don't dive in there. And he absolutely dives in there. And that's my big thing. You might be right about the penalty, but I think we could say equally the same about the one Otamendi gave away. I mean,
We'll get to that. I thought there was contact.
I know. I don't want to fast forward, but I either of the penalties, if you saw either of those penalties ruled out, you wouldn't have been shocked, and you're not shocked that they're given either. These are the gray areas.
I guess you're right, but if there's not contact, then
I think there was, though, Andrew. I do think there was.
With their legs, look, I'll watch it again. I mean, for the life of me, I watched it several times. I don't know that there's any actual leg contact.
Don't
I think
forget,
Di Maria
the VAR
just
will intervene if it's like a clear and obvious error. And the VAR team clearly thought, look, no, there's not enough there to go against the decision on the field. Which
I don't know. I mean, it looked up in real time. I didn't even think twice. Like, everything about it seemed to be penalty until halftime when I really watched it again and again and again. I don't know.
No, Jacob P. Good. I think Dembele just tripped him, just managed to catch his trailing leg. Casey Atkins, it was a pen. He tripped him from behind when Di Maria was in on. He tripped him from behind. Stacey Loftin, Koundé too far back as second defender as well. I don't see how he's got it. Because it was a switch of play from the Argentinians, it's natural that the French defense will slide across. And if they do, then the fullback has to take up someone in the center. That means it becomes Dembele's job to defend that.
Right.
And Tanner says, Dembele didn't argue the penalty call whatsoever. It tells you all you need to know. in my opinion.
All right. I want to be outvoted. I don't want there to be some like pall of controversy that hangs over this one. Like I don't want that for this game. So if I'm outvoted and it's unanimous, cool. I know that I didn't think anything of it until I got two text messages at halftime from people saying that saw the replay that said, are we sure about that? And so then I went back and watched it. And my takeaway was, no, I'm not sure about it, but fair enough. We move on, JJ, because after that goal happened, I said, I was watching with my parents and I said, okay, well, the thing I hope now is that like France are great. Like maybe now we'll be in for a fun game. They've been sleepwalking and like, they're going to have to wake up now.
No.
For the next 10 to 15 minutes, nothing, no response, more of the same. Just total one-way traffic. Nothing.
I was like, they're definitely going to get the ball to Mbappe now, and they're definitely going to try and stretch Romero. They're going to try to stretch Otamendi. We're going to see some pickup in the intensity. And if anything, Argentina were the ones that were inspired by the crowd, by the term that the stats guys hit is momentum. But the momentum was heading all the way in the direction of Argentina, not the other way. There was no response.
No, none. And then finally, when you thought, okay, maybe a smidgen of like a hint of a response, 36th minute, errant pass from Christian Romero. Molina couldn't handle it, goes out for a throw-in, taken quickly, gets to Mbappe. He threatens. He kind of gets around the corner, around Christian Romero, but Molina's back covering. That was the first moment where I was like, okay, maybe Mbappe playing his way into the game. That was a little bit threatening. But before, JJ, I could even finish like writing the note of that happening, bang, we're going the other way. Quick counter. Like you said, inch-perfect passing from one player to the next. McAllister's ball to Di Maria, perfect. And it's a goal. Like the first moment where I thought maybe France are coming back in, you blink your eyes, it's going back the other way, and it's 2-0, and it feels like it's over at that point.
It genuinely did. And there was, again, it sounds like hyperbole, but there was like emotion coming from the TV. It felt like you
Di Maria was crying on the field.
Yeah.
In the first half.
Yeah, it was. But it didn't feel like so Messi had said in the lead up to the game that this team, and I may be misquoting him here, he either said this team knows how to struggle or knows how to suffer. And so I didn't feel like they were soft. I didn't feel like they'd be overrun or anything of that nature. I thought this game is over. I genuinely felt that.
I thought that too. France had shown nothing you think that there was going to be any kind of response. And like you said, yeah, the emotion from Argentina, it just felt like nothing was going to happen on this day that would deny them this trophy. It just, I don't know. All the signs were just pointing at that. And, you know, I said before that, like, if you look up and down the Argentinian squad and you look at the French squad, like, it's probably like player for player, France are probably the better team. But I just can't help but wonder, like, how much does emotion matter? Like, how much, you know, does like the supposed, I mean, there was a clear home field advantage in that game for Argentina, as there has been throughout this tournament in any match that they played in. Like, how much do all those things lift a team to suddenly be that much better than a seemingly better opponent? Because I felt like that was kind of what we were witnessing in the first half, at least.
Yeah. Yeah. Now there's other angles to this too. We know that there's a virus that has spread amongst the French team.
Sure.
But I don't want to lean too much into that, because what we've said already rings true to me. This is a side that likes to do the minimum. And what are you going to do when you face a side that is playing at its maximum? And that's just the story of the game up until later on.
Well,
much later on.
Yeah. So the side that was doing the minimum in the 41st minute, that manager decided, okay, this is not sustainable. Minimum, no more. I have to intervene. And he did in a huge way, taking off two players in Olivier Giroud and Ousmane Dembele, who have been fairly heroic over the course of this tournament for this French side. He yanked them right on out of there in the first half.
Well, I think for Giroud, Andrew, like he wanted, and if you look when Thuram came in, what did Thuram come in and do? He ran around, he was physical, he put himself about, he tried to win tackles, he tried to get on the ball. That was the stuff Giroud couldn't and possibly can't do anymore. And Dembele, I think, was a direct reaction to them getting overrun on that right-hand side. on that left-hand side. It's the right. I was right. On the left-hand side of the Argentinian attack. I just think he wanted him out of the game. He wasn't in the game. He wasn't given anything going forward because France couldn't build attacks. And then the one thing he had to do defensively, he messed up. So I think he that was it. He had it. And it's another strange chapter in the weird career of probably one of the most talented players in the world, Ousmane Dembele. It's another weird one. Hooked before halftime in a World Cup final.
I know.
What to make of this guy and where his career is going, I don't know.
Like, we highlighted that. I talked about that after, I forget which Champions League match it was for Barcelona, but I think I remember talking about how he's just, in my frustration power rankings, he's near the top because, like, he is all things. He is, at moments, like, a joy to watch. He's incredible. He's pivotal to a team success. But then you have games like this, where this is, like you said, yanked before the half of a World Cup final.
Yeah.
I mean, I still think he's a great player, but this was a day he'll want to forget. That's for sure.
Queso madness. Dembele was having a bad half, but wasn't sure about Giroud. It wasn't that Giroud was doing anything bad. He just couldn't get on the ball. They couldn't get him the ball. Therefore, the thing to do was to get someone who's more mobile and who can get around the field. And I guess as we later on, it paid off.
It absolutely did. It did. So let's go to the second half now. Not much at the start. 58th minute, France seeing maybe a tiny bit more of the ball, but still, I mean, through the first roughly 15 minutes or more of that second half, it was kind of more of the same. You started seeing French frustration kick into play. Rabiot, hard foul. Mbappe, hard foul, where Mbappe kicked the back. I forget who. It was Rodrigo De Paul, I think, who was just getting kicked all over the place in this game. And he was just like...
Rabiot did a scissor tackle on him.
Yeah. And De Paul was just taking it left and right. 60th minute. Di Maria wreaking havoc again. Plays the ball in, dummy to Messi, but Rabiot with a last-ditch tackle to save another threatening moment. France still nothing. You're waiting and waiting. When will it come? Finally, like we said at the start of the pod, it took till the 71st minute for France to finally register a shot, and it was a poor one. Mbappe, who had done really nothing in this game. This was supposed to be the moment of ascension for him. Like, we all know how great he is, but on this stage, in this final, against Messi, it just felt like this was supposed to be the day when Mbappe inherits the crown. You can call that a silly narrative or whatever, but it is sort of just the mainstream media thought going into this one. And if that was the way it was supposed to go, Mbappe had come up small. Nothing. Until the 2 minutes that changed the world, JJ. The 80th penalty. Otamendi trips Kolomwani in the box. Mbappe steps up, takes it. Goal. This one, I don't know, we debated before, penalty or no penalty. I don't know, this one I thought that there was clear contact. I didn't think anything of it. I thought, yeah, well, he got him.
But it was just so typical of France. I mean, what was it? It was a long ball. It wasn't even to Mbappe. It was to Kolomwani. And, you know, it was a foot race. It was out of nothing. It wasn't from good play. It wasn't from anything. Like, if you contrast that to what Argentina had did with the ball for the second goal, it's just striking. And it doesn't matter because penalty was converted. Martinez got a hand on it. And then it's game on. And then you worry a little bit.
Yeah. Well, because that moment, you know, from whatever feebleness that it was born out of, the one thing it now does is give France hope. That, like, now, whatever tired legs were out there, whatever players were out there that were still battling this virus, like, all of a sudden, there's this hope that I think brings an adrenaline rush along with it. And conversely, if you're Argentina, I know what I was thinking watching this after that penalty went in. I'm wondering if you or other people out there who are watching us right now were thinking the same. I mean, I just thought they blew this lead in less time against the Dutch.
Yeah.
You know, like, this, that only just happened. Like, there, you can't help but start to think, like, uh-oh, we've done this before. Like, and then I wonder if there's a tightening up a little bit.
Well, Rene Elias, who clearly probably a Argentina supporter, Argentina s the bed so fast, supporting this team destroys my nerves. It happens quick for them. And but again, I suppose what Messi will say was, if this happens to us in 2018, France go on and win the game. This team has more resiliency in it.
I guess. I mean, yes. The answer is yes. Like they did, they went on and won. So who am I to argue? You could also say a team with more resiliency would give up that first goal and then shut it down and not allow it to get to this point. But they won.
I mean, a couple of people in the chat are making the point, and it was made on Twitter as well to us. Like Argentina looked absolutely after the equalizer goes in, who did you feel was going to go on and win it? Because
France.
Yeah, Argentina looked gassed. But to their credit, I would say in extra time, Argentina looked, for most of extra time, of the two periods of extra time, looked like they'd kind of got their rhythm back.
Yeah, you might be right. I mean, look, I thought extra time was chaos. Like, I thought both teams had good chances. But you're right in that Argentina, like, there was a point, and we'll go through it here, 81st minute goal, we're tied. Mbappe again, an incredible moment, a moment that will not be forgotten in World Cup history and football history. And so now here we go.
I think Messi loses his head on that goal because he's surrounded by two French players and he tries to dribble, keep the ball instead of going simple, doing it simple. Koeman wins it. Now Koeman wins it almost on the halfway line, but you look up and the Argentinian defenses and midfield is gone and the ball in. It's a lovely 1-2 between Thuram and Mbappe. And then this kind of sliding volleyed finish. Now, Martinez gets a hand on it. I still think there's just too much power generated. And there we go. It's, I mean, the faces in the stands of the Argentinian supporters, you just felt for them. They were watching it all collapse.
Yeah. I mean, it felt to me in that moment, and what you just said before about how gassed it seemed like Argentina were, Rodrigo De Paul was like the human embodiment of that. He just looked like he had nothing. He had been just destroyed for the last like 45 minutes of that game. Like, I don't know. I got to a place with this one where I remember thinking after that goal went in and saying, if Argentina do what they need to do to see out at least the rest of regulation here, if this goes to extra time, they may lose this one 5-2. Like, it might be one of those where, like, they just have so little left to give that, and France, you know, find it. And I know we don't, what you said before about momentum, but whatever. Like, I do believe in momentum as a thing. I thought it could have completely gotten away from Argentina, but it didn't. They did hold their nerve. The rest of regulation was crazy. 87th minute, nearly a penalty with Thuram. But the ref, to his credit, was on that.
Got it.
I mean,
perfect.
I thought for sure penalty, and he was right. I think Thuram went out of his way to create contact there and dove.
He literally kicked out at him as he was going over. The old, we've seen, I think, was it Jamie Vardy do that a couple of times? I mean, it's a classic. Lots of players do it.
It was like Reggie Miller going up for a three, like always kicked that leg out to get contact.
But the ref saw it immediately and called it perfectly, and it was the right decision.
With no argument from Thuram.
No, there wasn't. I'm curious to see what your notes are from then on.
90+3. DePaul loses possession. Mbappe with another shot deflected for a corner. Mbappe has awoken is what I wrote. 90+4. The chaos continues. Foul, but advantage is played. Huge save from Martinez. Argentina defense is falling apart. And then JJ, 90+7. Perhaps what could have been the final touch of the ball, if this was a script that was being written, the ball comes to Messi at the top of the box, just creates a little bit of space, and then whips in a laser at goal, but it's too central. Even with that, Lloris has to make a great save to knock it over the bar. Yeah, I thought, I mean, that was, if you had your fairy tale ending for this storybook script, like that ball finding the back of the net would have been it. It didn't, but it was at least a sign that Argentina weren't dead yet as this one then went off to extra time. But the final, I mean, from the penalty through the end of stoppage time were 17 of just the most pulse pounding minutes that this sport has delivered, at least as far as I'm concerned, watching this game.
Yeah, it was truly, truly engaging stuff. Like, how could you not be moved by this? It was, you know, again, I was rooting for Argentina. I was rooting for Messi. I wanted this to happen for them. And I was just like that fear that's always there because the French have such talent. I thought extra time was going to see the French not run away with it, but get another one and finish the game out. But it didn't happen like that.
No, it didn't. I thought that too. And I felt the same as you. Like I said, when I watch England, I sometimes can't help it. I just find myself rooting a certain way. That happened with me too, with Argentina. I don't know. I just wanted it. I couldn't help it.
Just take me through your points in extra time, Andrew, please.
I don't have too much. Well, I got to a point.
You'll say something, and it was just one of those unbelievable moments. I say unbelievable. It's a believable moment. Just on Twitter, one of our listeners was Johnny on the spot, but I'll wait for you to tee me up.
So, yeah, I started to reach that phase of the game where I was like, I just want to watch this now. I'm done. I'm putting the computer away. Now, I did put a couple things down. Both 105th minute, it all opens up for Lautaro Martinez. But a guy who we've been critical of at times throughout this tournament, Upamecano, comes flying in to make a last-ditch deflection and knock that away. It was an unbelievable defensive play, one of the defensive plays of the tournament, certainly of this game. If France go on and win, you circle it, you remember it. If you're him, you get a picture printed and put on your wall. But then 2 minutes later...
Whoa. Hold on one second. Why is he taking a second touch?
Fair point.
Like, that gives Upamecano the few seconds. It's a brilliant block, don't get me wrong, but it gives him just a chance to get across. And I tweeted out, I think in caps, why is Lautaro taking a second touch there? And someone responds really quickly, this is actually weird that he did that. I won't do X and Y axis, but he sent me a screen grab of a stats bomb chart from the 21-22 season. Lautaro Martinez, in terms of shots per 90, first time shots, is way out, way out in front. So against his better nature. Now, does that come from having a kind of an up and down tournament? You know, like Saudi Arabia game didn't work out. He comes back he scores in another game, converts his penalty in another game. But like just the bad start to the tournament, maybe he's tightened up a bit and maybe he's not feeling himself. And he takes that second touch instead of hitting the first time. Because I was ready. I was ready to see the net bustling with a goal there.
Yeah, as was I. I thought that was coming. It didn't. But then 2 minutes later, another one of these situations where as you're kind of waiting for the whistle to blow for the end of the first period of extra time, hold on. All of a sudden, Acuna with a great ball for Martinez again. But again, as things were opening up, it's Upamecano who's there. And I think he deflects it wide. It was given as a goal kick. I think he got a boot on it. At the very least, if he didn't, he certainly bumped Martinez off of whatever he wanted to do and made it a little more difficult for him.
He looked like he was running in slow motion?
I mean, that's hard for me to answer that. That's kind of subjective.
Didn't look sharp.
I thought Upamecano got a touch on it, but it was given as a goal kick. But I'll still give him credit because I thought he did deflect it wide. And so then that takes us into the second period of extra time. And then 108th minute, it was for whatever we thought the moment was going to be deep in stoppage time when Messi had his chance. Here comes Argentina on the break. Lautaro Martinez fires one at Hugo Lloris. Good save, but it comes right there. And there he is. Lionel Messi converts. You had to wait a moment. Unfortunately, it wasn't the kind of goal where you could instinctively just go crazy because it was knocked out. But I mean, it's clear as day. Like, obviously, that ball across the line with ease. Koundé was deep in the net when he tried to send it back out. Then there was also the VAR review for an offside. It was close, but right call, onside. Go crazy, Argentina. I'm sure Buenos Aires exploded in that moment. And it felt like the script had been written, JJ, and the book had been closed.
But it had not, Andrew. Just a quick one from Gino Barrios on the chat. Anyone else think it's wild Argentina only made one sub in regulation, and what a sub that they made, and played with two left backs for most of the game? There's another guy who will probably feel a little bit relieved, and that will be Scaloni. I definitely think so. Anyway.
Interesting. Okay. Well, we can talk about that because I do have a question at the end of this that I was going to ask you. But before we get to that, 116th. We thought this was over, but it was not a clear. I mean, we argue all the time. I don't know what a handball is or isn't. I give up. I'm done trying. This one, like, as for me, this one was. It's like, I didn't think there was any controversy around this. This one was. And an incredible moment where, for the second time in this game, Argentinian fans that thought they had this trophy won are now being forced to reckon with the possibility that, wait a minute, no, you don't. French fans that thought they were done, wait a minute, we're back in this. Mbappe converts, a hat trick for Mbappe. I mean, you talk about like a moment being robbed from him, a hat trick in a World Cup final. But he winds up eventually going down as the loser. Like, this was supposed to be his, I don't know. It's a weird thing to say. This was supposed to be his moment, and his ascension and all that. But like, he is that guy. Like, I think he's proven that, you know, the outcome of this, I don't know how much it matters in terms of what I feel about him right now, but to get the hat trick in a losing effort, this is going to be a weird one for him to look back on.
Yeah, certainly is. Just on the handball, I asked the animals in the stream, clear handball, definite handball, handball, elbow was too high, 100% handball, current laws, yes, handball. Handball hit outside the t-shirt line. I agree, but he's in a kind of a jumping motion, so it's difficult to do any of that, or to keep your limbs in check when you're making those kind of dynamic movements. But yeah, letter of the law, handball, I guess.
I don't know. I didn't see it as a controversy.
At that point, you had to feel confident when you had Emi Martinez for penalties.
Well, yeah. And before we got to penalties, like we talked about at the start of all this, we now come full circle to one of the craziest sequences in the history of the sport. the third minute of stoppage time in extra time. It was kind of just this, like, what is going on here? Exclamation mark to this game of Emi Martinez making what I'm going to go ahead and say is the biggest save in the history of this sport. I mean, he single-leggedly gives Argentina a chance to win this World Cup by sticking out that limb. And then we come right back the other way. Lautaro Martinez gets a free header in front of goal, puts it so far wide. It was, it was a horrifying moment for him. And again, like we talked about, if Argentina go on and lose this, it's the moment that he'll have a hard time coming back from, to not even at least put it on frame, force Hugo Lloris to do something. But he puts it so far wide. And then finally, almost mercifully, the whistle blows and off to penalties we go. I don't know. There's nothing, like, we can debate for the rest of time as to whether or not penalties are a suitable way to end a soccer match. Like, I don't know that I can think of another one. I don't believe they can play forever. Like some people would want, just keep going until someone scores. I think it becomes a matter of safety at a certain point with how much these guys are running. But this game in particular, it just felt wrong to me that someone's legacy was going to be negatively affected by a penalty. It's hard to put it into words. I just didn't want this one to be decided at the spot. I don't know. Just more than ever, I felt.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, but we just got to that point, and it's like there's nothing you can do after that. We don't have any rule to play an extra 10 minutes or an extra 5 minutes. That's all we've got. So you end up just accepting it. Although I do feel like a final like that does deserve to be finished on the field, but whatever. People are saying save was amazing. Just going back a little bit, a lot of people making a good distinction. Maybe not the greatest save ever, but the most clutch save ever. So I think that's
okay.
A good one.
Yeah, that's probably a good way of putting it. I mean, I'm sure that there have been saves with a higher degree of difficulty, but I just can't remove it from the context within which it occurred.
Like exactly. You're right. Just on the pens, as I get older, and I've seen it in the chat here, maybe we do the MLS penalty. You got to get your shot off within 20 seconds. You run from, what was it, 25 yards out or something like that? Further out, 30 yards. 1v1 v the keeper. Now, that seems especially cruel if you're already cramping up after 120 minutes. But,
yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I know that there have been people who before have argued for corner kicks. you know, at least some kind of like some sort of phase of play that does involve.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not going to say penalty. They do involve skill. They absolutely do. They're not. I've come to learn over the years. In the beginning, if you listen to us doing this podcast 9 years ago, you would hear me basically saying it's all luck. It's nonsense. It's BS. It doesn't mean anything other than deciding the outcome of a game. I have come to see that a little bit differently. There is skill attached to it. There is still luck. I've seen guys take plenty of awful penalties that have been converted. I've seen guys take good penalties that a keeper has somehow, you know, done his homework and made the save. So there is still luck involved to it. But there is a talent to it as well. We've seen the difference between guys who know what they're doing when they step up there and the ones who are just utterly clueless. So there is skill.
I think from this podcast, we've learned bring back the golden goal. Just do that.
Why not? I don't know why they were so like, you tell me what was the reason? Were they thinking that teams were just too nervous? So they weren't trying to go for it.
I think that was part of it. I think they felt they didn't get the return on investment, basically saying there wasn't enough games that ultimately got solved and a lot still ended up at penalties. I think that was what it was. Although there's again, the classic example was Trezeguet's goal against Italy.
And I remember in the 2002 World Cup on against Italy for South Korea. What a moment.
You got to stick with it if you're going to do something. You've got to stick with it allow teams to realize here's your chance to do it.
I think they bailed too soon. And just did. Like, also too, fine. You can say that like it wasn't creating the sort of outcome that they were hoping for consistently enough, but just like from a fan's perspective, like watching an NHL playoff game that goes to a sudden death overtime, like even when nothing's happening, there is still this fear, this like palpable tension that like any misplaced pass, like any mistake from anyone out there is going to end this game at any moment. Like you're living the entire extra frame on a knife's edge. Even if nothing's happening, you don't know that yet. Like you can look back on it and say, ah, nothing happened. That was a waste. But in the moment, you're terrified. So I don't know. I think I wouldn't rush to your suggestion of going to the MLS penalty structure, but I think golden goal, I think there's another life for that. I really do. As far as penalties are concerned, I mean, look, I don't have much analysis on them other than to say, you know, Martinez is one of the most interesting, Emi Martinez, I should say. There were multiple Martinezes out there. Emi Martinez is one of the most interesting characters that this sport has right now. His histrionics, his antics, he's a complete and total D out there. But it works for him.
I do think there's some things that they could tidy up. Like, I don't mind him mouthing. I don't mind him being, you know, the kind of the D that you call him. But I do think that one, was it Tuchmani's penalty that was missed? I mean, I'm already forgetting the penalties. There was just so much drama.
Yeah, that he put wide.
But prior to that penalty, he walks up and down the line holding the ball. And like kind of talking to himself. And then when it's time to give the ball to the penalty taker, he throws it to the edge of the box. Yeah. Like that shouldn't be allowed, right?
So what is that, a card? Like, what do you do there?
No, not a card. You make sure that the ball is not in his hands, that he's not allowed to do that, that the ball is in the possession of the referee and then handed to the penalty taker to place on the spot.
I guess, but like how can you do that though? Like if Martinez picks the ball up, like, and what does he do? Like, is the referee going to fight him? Like, I mean, yeah, what I do you do?
People are pointing out that, and my girlfriend said it to me too. I had obviously given up on the award celebration thing, but Sean notes in the chat that humping the golden glove was interesting. So he got the golden glove and he put it down where his penis would be and simulated a sexual act on it.
I don't know. My instinct is to laugh. If you're someone out there whose instinct was to be horrified, I guess I won't fault you for that. I mean, like, I guess we were doing this podcast at that point, so I haven't seen it yet. I'm going to have to go back and look at that. All right.
It's going to become a GIF, basically.
Yeah. Wow.
A GIF for ownage, as if we don't have enough of that in the modern.
I mean, I saw his press, he met the media afterwards, and he was like, he couldn't stop crying. Obviously this meant a lot to him. I guess my biggest takeaway from these penalties was partially that Martinez, a heroic figure for Argentina, for however much of a character he is. Thank God Messi converted his. I couldn't bear to see that had he not.
Messi gave us the full gamut of penalties in the last few games. So the one against the Netherlands, in regular time, blasted into the top corner, whipped high and handsome. And then the first penalty today with the stutter step, and he does Lloris on that. And then he's suddenly become this confident penalty kick taker. And then he mixes it up when it comes to the shootout and does this little rolled penalty.
Was
sends
that
in the wrong way and just rolls it. Oh,
are we sure that was a good penalty?
Got away with it, maybe.
Okay. He scored. That's what matters.
He did send Lloris the wrong way. So
I guess
if you send the keeper the wrong way and the ball doesn't goes the way you want it to, that's a good pen.
I guess you're right.
Yeah.
We'll give it to him. It's Messi. Sure. We'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
Darren Fitzpatrick, penalties come down to balls. As simple as that. That is true, Darren, and true vote literally and metaphorically.
Yeah. Good point. Well said, Darren. And my only other takeaway from penalties is Gonzalo Montiel. Just like one of the interesting things about penalties, for however much we might not like them or think that they're a suitable or an unsuitable way to end a game, much like baseball, in baseball, if it's the bottom of the ninth and two out and there's two outs, you don't choose who comes up to bat in game seven of a World Series. The moment chooses the person for you. You don't get to decide, okay, Bryce Harper, get up there and be a hero. Like whoever it is. And that guy either becomes a hero or not. Francisco Cabrera for the Atlanta Braves in 92, a nobody, a hero with a game winning hit. It's a lot like that in penalties. And so up steps Gonzalo Montiel, again, a fine player, but he's now bearing the weight of a World Cup. And even more than that, we all know how much this World Cup has meant to these Argentinian players to win it, not just for their country, but specifically for that guy, for Messi. He's now bearing the weight of that as well. And he goes up, to his credit, he looks calm, he converts it, and you could see instantaneously that the weight of all those things were not lost on him. He broke down the second that ball went through the net. It's one of the most emotional things I've ever seen in sports, because he was so aware of what was at stake with that kick. There was no, in his head, he on that team, he's not one of the superstars. He's kind of just a guy on this Argentinian team. And for the spotlight to find that guy.
Yeah.
And for him to convert, I can't even imagine what must have been going through his head. And he was overcome instantly. It was really incredible.
I would love to see the stats. We know these guys who work with Liverpool on set pieces and penalties, and they have them all wired up and there's electrodes on their brains. And I would love to know the body state that you get into, the kind of stress that's on the brain, the stress that's on the central nervous system, all those things in those scenarios. I was genuinely delighted. I genuinely felt delighted about it. And it just felt fitting to me. And I can't believe how emotional I get. I guess when you've got a character like Messi that you've been watching and just kind of enjoying for this length of time, and he finally achieves this moment in his career, I suppose you're not just crying for him, you're crying for yourself too. You're invested in what's happened, and you think of the passing of time and all the moments you've spent watching him, and it all comes together. And I was genuinely emotional for him. And there's lots not to like about Messi, and certainly, and we've talked about on this podcast, the sponsorships he's taken on, the associations he's taken on when he has more money than God. He's put himself in the pocket of some bad actors, but just as the footballer, as the footballing persona, I felt nothing other than just joy for him.
Yeah, so did I. I don't know. It's hard to explain. I wanted this to be the outcome. And that's nothing against France. I like this French team quite a bit. I mean, there's a lot of players there that I love. We'll talk about legacies that come out of this. But I'm someone who actually has been somewhat supportive of Didier Deschamps when many have not been.
No, he's been. He's even talked about you.
He said it. That's nice.
He said, nice. I may not have the support of the French public, but I have the backing of Andrew.
Which probably means more.
Yeah.
In my estimation.
One quick one, Andrew. Darcy says, wasn't it Montiel who gave up the handball penalty? And it was. So there was even more writing on that.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Yeah. Just an incredible moment. You know, you talk about Messi, I guess, as we wind it down now and kind of talk about the big takeaways from this. It's funny. I wanted him to win this, but like, to me, even before this happened, you know, a lot of people have asked me both like on Twitter, at work, wherever, just like, okay, will this settle the debate? And like, I've been of the opinion that like, I don't know, for me, no, like there isn't one. Like whatever happens here with Messi, with Argentina, whatever had happened in this game, it would not change for me the light within which I view him. Like he's the greatest I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess for some people, maybe this does for Messi what Tom Brady's Super Bowl with the Bucks did for like the Brady Manning debate, where it just like completely closes the door on any argument. Maybe there's people where like they'll view this in that way with Messi, Ronaldo, Pele, Maradona, whoever. They'll think, okay, well, he did it now, and that is like, now we can end this conversation forever. I was kind of already there.
Yeah.
I'm just happy. I just think it's cool that he did it, that like we all have this memory of now having seen him win this thing. But in terms of what it means for his status as a player, it did not affect me at all.
But more than that, he wasn't a part of it, and he limped over the line and he finally gets to lift that trophy. As Brad points out, Messi had the best World Cup of his career.
Yeah.
And he deserved this tournament. Win. I mean, the World Cup has been a kind of a terrible place for him. And now if you look at the last 2 years of international football, the Copa America in last year and now the World Cup, this is a fine Indian summer to his international career. And and you know, the GOAT thing is, I don't know, I got very bored with it. I mean, yeah. I remember it at its height on the podcast, like when Ronaldo was ripping off those Champions League wins with Real Madrid. It got too much, because at that point you're creating spreadsheets. You're creating, you know, this versus that. Ronaldo is the GOAT because he has his European Championship trophy, but Messi doesn't have anything. It sucked the joy out of it a little bit.
Isn't there a line like that? Comparison is the thief of joy.
Yeah. You might be right. Yeah,
essentially saying like, who cares? Let's just love all of them.
I wasn't sat comparing the European Championship final in 2016 to the World Cup final as I watched that there. I was just enthralled by what happened. And it's interesting, because we had one of the great things about doing YouTube is like the comment sections are amazing. And on our Reddit, there was another comment where someone was pushing back against the iconic moment Messi had against Gvardiol in the semifinal. And I'm like, okay. And he said, it wasn't an iconic moment, rather a measure of Messi's decline that he didn't blow away from Gvardiol. And I just thought, wow. Like, if we are, and I know I'm the worst on the podcast from comparing things. Sometimes it can be fun, but sometimes it is the thief of joy. No. You know, Messi's not going to blow away from Gvardiol. Gvardiol is 15 years younger than him. It's not happening. But look at what he did do to him. Can't we just enjoy that? And it's the same today. You know, the things Messi can do with the ball, the things that Argentina did today, maybe we should forget about GOAT conversations and finally he's won his trophy and just actually just appreciate the final we saw for what it was, which was a superb game.
I love the animals in Reddit. I do. Yeah. All of them. I love that space. But for whoever wrote that, like, imagine that. Imagine watching that moment and your takeaway being, boy, he's not good anymore.
But it's not that. It was more. Yeah, it was, you know, it was what it was. But look at how it's more of this than it is of that. you know, it's more decline than it is. Now, the person I responded, the person rode back a little bit. I've revealed myself unto the animals, by the way. Yeah, because I want to just, you know, we've got things coming up on the podcast and their opinions are wanted. So
yeah,
I wanted to get in touch with them. But I just said, you know what? Yeah, just the way he toyed with Gvardiol, kept the ball away from him. Can we not just enjoy that rather than he didn't have the athletic fibers in his hamstrings to scorch him? Like, I mean, nobody at 26 is the same then at 36. They aren't, but they can be differently good.
Right. Your game changes. You find a way, you adapt, you get smarter. You work the angles. I don't know. I'm going to love that moment. And I'm not going to see it as a negative.
Cormac got in the chat and he said, I guess this was when I was listing Messi's achievements on the international stage over the past two years. He said, don't forget the finalissimo, which was that. Why did that happen? Argentina and Italy? The European Championship winners versus the Copa America winners.
Yeah. As an idea, I don't hate that.
I did not take that seriously.
All right, but like, I don't think it's a horrible idea to put those two up against each other. What we should have is the return of the Confederations Cup, where they can all take part.
Well, only love that because America excelled once at it.
But not only that, it also gave greater meaning to the Gold Cup. It like gave the Gold Cup like something to like, okay, winning this means we get to be in this thing now. Like, so, hey, look, whatever. This doesn't need to be a debate on the importance of the.
But, by the way, the chat here now is descending into a little bit of what's going to come down the line when we return to regular domestic soccer. Dan Canyon, Gvardiol is the Rolls Royce JJ's Dutchman used to be. See, this is already happening now. We're already clicking back into tribal mode. Uh-huh. You know, we digs about Virgil van Dijk on the day of the World Cup final.
Hey, you started this.
With what?
I saw what you posted on Twitter the other day.
What?
This will never get old to me. The 5-0 Liverpool over Tottenham. What was that about?
Honestly, that could have been the 5-0 over Bradford
knew what you were doing.
Or Cheltenham. It just happened to be Tottenham that day. It was such an amazing performance. It was not targeted at Tottenham supporters.
You knew what you were doing.
I just don't think enough of you to target you with anything.
Wow, that actually hurts even more than watching that video. A couple final thoughts here. I'm just thinking, kind of going through, you know, different takeaways and legacies. And we're going to do a podcast this week where we kind of look back at this World Cup as a whole. Not a full Devonlings, but like we'll kind of go through different categories of our thoughts on this tournament. It should be fun to kind of move past it and back into club play the best way that we can. But like right now in this moment, just looking at these two teams and what this game meant for certain people, you know, we talked about Messi. Doesn't change the way I feel about him. He was always just this player that I feel so lucky to have watched. And this is a thing that I'm just glad that I saw him achieve. And in this fashion where he scored twice and converted a penalty. That's just so cool to me. So beyond that though, I think about some others and I'm going to bring up this two names now. First I'll bring up Di Maria, because, you know, I know he was taken off early, 63rd minute, but my God, I thought he was brilliant in this game. And he's always kind of been this quiet Robin to Messi's Batman, I guess, with Argentina. You know, Argentina have not experienced a ton of success. And so there are people out there, some have put that on Messi, but there have been other people who will protect Messi at every chance that they can and want to say, well, look what he's surrounded by. You know, he's never had the team. Well, Di Maria has always been a part of that. And so if you could say that Messi's never had the support, Di Maria, Sergio Aguero, guys like that, they've had to wear that as being part of the problem. And so if you look at Di Maria now, scored in the Copa America final, scored JJ in the finalissimo against Italy, for whatever you want to make that into.
Big final. Cormac O'Malley loves that final.
Was spectacular today. In a World Cup final when he hadn't played in the previous matches. So like for him, like there are certain guys, Messi, it doesn't change my opinion of him, but Di Maria is one where I think now we're looking at a legacy that does benefit significantly from what happened in that game today. I think the way people will look at him now is different after he put up that kind of performance on that stage.
Yeah. And again, club football, he's been off the radar a little bit. I can think of the good things he's done in the Champions League for PSG, but who watched the French League? Then he goes to Juventus. You know, his spell in England was what it was. And so, yeah, because of our centrism toward that scepter dial, we kind of forget about, you know, this guy has been a top performer. I think Tim Vickery tweeted out, is there a top world-class player who has less ego than Di Maria? Certainly feels like that. But he was brilliant. I also think that, to be self-indulgent for one second, the way we talked about, you know, we were doing our Premier League previews like two seasons ago, and we're talking about Brighton and Alexis McAllister, they loaned him back out to Boca Juniors. You know, he couldn't get in the Brighton side for a while. Yeah. Now, this season, that has changed, and he has become a player who can, who looks really good striking a ball more than anything. I mean, he had an absolute worldie ruled out not so long ago. But his rise in the tournament, you wonder if there's still that kind of, I know with analytics and everything now, the rush to sign a tournament player has kind of gone away a bit. Tottenham used to be king of that, Andrew. Player at a good tournament, Tottenham would be immediately in for him.
Yeah. I mean, I understand the instinct.
Yeah, but you need a better sample size than 6 games in or 7 games or 3-4 games in international football before you sign a player. But that said, I'm just wondering if someone's looking at this guy and thinking, we could get a bargain here. He's that bright.
But that's the problem, though, with doing it on this stage, is that like now you can't get it at a bargain. Because like now that's when like now is when his value is probably at its peak.
The 94 World Cup was the peak of that, I think. West Ham bought Florin Raducanu from like brought him in. He was a good player. He had a good reputation, but it was based on his tournament with Romania, and he decided he preferred shopping than playing for West Ham. And Tottenham signed, was it Gica Popescu and Ili Dumitrescu? And now Gica Popescu went on, played for Barcelona, was excellent. But Dumitrescu was an absolute failure. So I wonder if that'll happen. Anyway, I'm going off on a tangent. What am I doing?
I'm trying to think, though, of the other great examples of that. I always felt like Andre Arshavin was an example of that. A guy who had a crazy great tournament.
I think he was a good all-around player. You know, he'd done it at the club level for Zenit as well. It wasn't, I don't think it happens at all anymore, really.
Sort of in that vein, I mean, look, the tournament that James Rodriguez had in 2014 was just so revelatory. Like, I know injuries had a lot to do, but he never really came close to fulfilling what we saw in that tournament with Colombia. Let's see. One other legacy that I want to mention here, a name that we only mentioned once earlier in this podcast, but I want to get more thoughts from this about this person from you before we click off.
Okay.
I'm reading here from Sid Lowe in The Guardian, who wrote a feature on this person. And I'm talking about Lionel Scaloni for Argentina.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going to read you a quote, and then I'll tell you who said it. So Sid Lowe says here, initially he, Scaloni, was named interim manager for 2 games. 2 more followed, then 2 more. Quote, there wasn't time to find a replacement. This person continues saying, he's a great lad, but he can't even direct traffic. How can you give the national team to Scaloni? Are we all mad? Eat an asado, fine, but coach a national team? It's way too big for you. Like Minguito Tinguetella wearing Gordo Porcel's suit. Porcel and Tinguetella are a comedy duo, an Argentinian Laurel and Hardy, if you like. And
I know them well. They are hilarious.
So that was the scathing criticism that footballing god Diego Maradona leveled at Lionel Scaloni prior when he was named manager.
Imagine hearing that from Diego.
And now here we are. He just won a World Cup. He just did this thing that great managers have tried and failed, Maradona among them, since 1986.
But let's look at that. Look at what Argentina have been doing. We won't go back to, we'll just go 20 years. Like, let's get in the best minds we can. Let's get in Bielsa. Didn't work out. Let's get in Sampaoli, who was a winner coming into that team, or at least had done with another South American team. Spectacularly didn't work out. And he was part of Sampaoli's staff at the last World Cup. So it wasn't like they went and headhunted someone again. This was a guy that said, look, we'll give him a shot. He's the caretaker. We'll give him a go. And I mean, it's worked out spectacularly well.
They just won the World Cup.
whatever he's done and whatever criticism you want to make today about substitutions, not recognizing when players were run off their feet, maybe taking out Di Maria too soon, all those things. And whatever he has done, they just look a more relaxed and more together unit than they did in 2018. And as we know, tournaments are a lot about vibes and getting on well together and feeling connected and feeling like a collective. And you got to give him credit for that.
I don't have much more, JJ, other than one tweet from Stars and Stripes FC that I wanted to read, which summed up this game for me perfectly. They wrote, this was during the game still. They wrote, watching this, I have to ask, do we actually want the USA to make a World Cup final? The emotional swings over the last 95 minutes are like a lifetime of feelings, and I'm not even French or Argentine. I don't know that I could physically handle a game like that if my team was a part of it. It's too much. He's right. If that's what it's going to be, I'm good. I don't need it.
Yeah, well, that's absolute. I mean, we live for the tension. We live for these things. We want the stress. We're here like, oh, that wasn't that so stressful. But we absolutely enjoyed every minute of it on that kind of weird level that only sports can do. Final thing for me before we get out, and thanks to everyone for joining in. I know it's on a Sunday, but this was a lot of fun.
I know. I missed pretty much the whole Eagles game, JJ. Thanks a lot.
You really haven't. Are they barely out of the first quarter?
It's 3 o'clock right now.
Yeah.
Doubt it.
Deep dive on whether Messi can, this is from Jordan on Twitter. Deep dive on whether Messi can handle the long travel and hot nights of MLS. So, I mean, that's the next thing. Do we see him roll up into Inter Miami and line out for Phil Neville's Inter Miami? Like, wouldn't that be one of the biggest contrasts from amazing high to, What am I doing now?
Yeah, I don't know. Look, I wouldn't hate it, but I also don't want to see him leave the elite, like that, whatever the most elite level is of competition. He just won player of the tournament at the World Cup. Clearly, this guy still has more greatness to give. If he decides to give it to MLS, I won't be, well, I don't know. I guess I'll be a little conflicted. I want to see this guy playing big Champions League games. I just do. UEFA Champions League. I suppose I should specify.
Listen,
I don't know, but I want MLS to grow, and if he helps, then so be it.
Yeah, I hope at least he'll buy the steaks. That would be the least. You go out for dinner with Messi, he looks after everybody. That's the most you could.
He can't make that mistake.
So listen, a few people in the chat are saying they're not ready for the World Cup to be over. Technically, we're going to ride this baby a little bit longer. We are going to have a pod next week. We will let you know when it's dropping, which basically is not quite, as Andrew said, a full de Vundlings, but it will be a retrospective of the World Cup just passed. And we look forward to bringing that to you on the old audio podcast. Can you comment on this? Comment on this video, like this video before you leave the stream, comment and like, and then continue the comments and do all the things that the gurus tell us we need to do so we can engage. Keep bringing you the best content we possibly can for two guys who are just talking words.
That's pretty much it. This was so much fun. I mean, what an unbelievably unforgettable day of sports that we just witnessed. Maybe the greatest game in the history of the sport, a crowning achievement for maybe the greatest player in the history of the sport. None of us will ever forget this. God, what a pleasure it was to watch it and then be able to get to talk about it afterwards with you, JJ. This was a ton of fun as well. I'm tapped out. I got nothing left. Like JJ said, we'll be back with you during the week for a retrospective on the World Cup. And then, of course, we're going to have to kind of bring you guys a previously on the Premier League podcast as well, because Boxing Day, we're right back in it. Like, it never left. Ugh. This was all just a dream, JJ. The Premier League was a week ago. We all just experienced a dream, and now we're right back at it. Just nothing happened, and back into the season we go. But it'll be fun as well. It's going to take a little getting used to, but we're going to love it because we always do, because this is the best. This is the absolute best. You're the best as well, my friend.
Thank you.
To you, I say...
Check you later, Andrew.
I'll see you, man.
Take care. Enjoy those Eagles.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.